Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Van Maren Show. My name is Jonathan Van Maren, and today I'm going to be talking to Zofia Tothbureau, who is the head of the Brussels office of the European Conservative, where those of you who regularly read my work will know that I spent 2 months recently doing a fellowship at the European Conservative in Brussels. I was there for January and February, writing on a range of cultural and social issues. I'm biased, but I do believe the European Conservative is a really excellent publication. And recently, they were one of the sponsors of the National Conservatism Conference. And I've written about the National Conservatism Conference for LifeSite News before. I've reported on several of those conferences for a number of different outlets. I covered a whole series of speeches for LSN at their inaugural conference in Washington, D.C. And this year, the conference was to be held in Brussels. And what happened was really extraordinary. For any of you who are interested, you should head over to the European Conservative to check out the coverage of it. There's also some good coverage at Unheard. And there are some pretty brutal videos of the police blocking conservative attendees, including politicians, from entering the conference. And so I just wanted to talk to Zofia and kind of lay out what happened and to kind of walk people through what took place in Europe's capital, home to all of the European Union institutions, because I think it was a pretty frightful thing that took place. I hope not a harbinger of things to come, but at least a wake-up call for those who believe that these international institutions are open to being a home to conservatives as well. Here's our conversation. So just to start off, you were one of the organizers setting up the location for the NatCon Brussels conference. The NatCon conference happens every year. It's been in Rome. It's been in London. I attended one of them in Washington, D.C. And so this is a regular conference that happens annually, and it's kind of a gathering of the conservative intelligentsia from both sides of the Atlantic. So where did you run into the first problems trying to get a location in the European capital?
Okay, just so to make it clear, the European Conservative was a co-sponsor of the conference, and the reason they needed our help, you know, both MCC Brussels and the European Conservative has offices in Brussels, and as things started getting trickier and trickier, they needed our local help to sort things out. So yes, I've been in touch with Concert Noble, the very first venue of NatCon Brussels. We started the negotiations last November, if I remember correctly, and everything was going smoothly until only 2 weeks before the conference, where, you know, just basically Concert Noble went completely silent. And, you know, despite all our attempts to reach out and to, you know, like get an answer, because there were some things up in the air, both logistically and administratively. And we knew that they were under massive media and political pressure from the left-wing forces of Brussels. Even Antifa threatened with the protest. So just to make it clear what happened, and I will go into some more details. What happened in Brussels last week is just unbelievable and unacceptable. I mean, we always knew that conservatives are not welcome in Brussels, but last week's events took it just to a different level, with basically Brussels declaring war on freedom of speech. According to Brussels liberal forces, freedom of speech apparently has its limits, and we reached that limit with NatCon Brussels. As you said, the premier gathering of Europe's conservative voices, we had intellectuals and politicians from all across Europe. And so what happened perfectly illustrates the undemocratic nature of the dominant forces, leftist forces of Brussels. But spoiler alert, we managed to... Actually two venues cancelled and three mayors tried to shut down the conference. So despite all those efforts, we were able to carry on and have the event. So free speech has won. So circling back to what happened with Concert Noble, they went silent for 2 weeks, and then we managed to get an in-person meeting. Frank Furedi, director of MCC Brussels, and myself managed to get an in-person meeting with the CEO of Concert Noble. And the CEO of Concert Noble told us that the reason why they are a bit hesitant to give a home for this conference is because, as I mentioned, of the massive media pressure and also because of safety concerns. And the CEO himself personally reached out to the Brussels mayor many times to request proper police protection. And the Brussels mayor only would have given us two unarmed police officers. And we've got verbal confirmation. Unfortunately, it was only verbal. It wasn't put in writing for good reasons, that the Brussels mayor's decision was purely political and had no other reason for not giving us the protection that was needed. So after the Brussels mayor reluctance to give us the proper protection, National Concert, the Concert Noble canceled. So we had 4 days to find an alternative venue for the conference, and we managed to do that. We found the second venue, Sofitel. It's a very commercial facility. It's a Plaza Jordan. It's a hotel, basically. And we started the negotiations, we signed the contract, we transferred the deposit, we thought everything is on track, until it wasn't. So only one day before the conference, sold. So it was a shock that such, as I said, commercial facility would bow to the will of Brussels liberal forces. And, you know, we didn't give up.
And so why did they cancel?
What they said, the reason was conflict of interests. We still don't know what they mean by that. We had lawyers contacting the management of Sofitel, and I assume, I cannot confirm, but there are still some ongoing legal battles with Sofitel because of the deposit we paid and because of the reason. I mean, you know, they can always cancel due to some vis-mayor thingy, but the conflict of interest, it was a very weak excuse, to be honest. But my assumption is that because of the EU Council, we organized the conference, the NetCon conference, on the sidelines of the EU Council meeting. You know, we had great reasons for it, but it also just, you know, we end up having more problems with all high-profile politicians entering Brussels at the same time. So my assumption is that some people, some high-level politicians who were staying at Sofitel found out about our conference and they made some phone calls.
Right.
That is my actual take on this. And, you know, we didn't give up and we kept searching for a venue that would host us. And by a miracle, we managed to secure Claridge, the third venue. And it was pretty hard. I mean, we had to relocate the conference overnight. We stayed up all night, packing things, putting things out, checking with the AV team. I mean, what Claridge's staff did was just amazing. They were there all night with us, trying to put everything together so that we might start our conference the next morning. It was truly remarkable.
So now you get to Claridge's, which you basically pulled an all-nighter to get it set up after the second venue canceled, you know, with a day to go. But then there's all this footage, and I remember realizing what was going on when suddenly clips started getting posted by you folks at the European Conservative, a lot of my friends from Brussels, and then, like, I usually follow what's going on at NADCON anyways, because a lot of the speeches are kind of interesting, and a lot of the speakers show up intending to kind of explore new ideas, to kind of engage in really interesting panel discussions. So NADCON is always very interesting because they've got this sort of creative tension between a lot of different versions of conservatism, which, you know, one of the few benefits of the post-Christian age is that we get to watch new ideas, you know, come about in real time. And I think NatCon does a great job of showcasing those tensions and trying to create some sort of synergy. And so I was getting ready to watch a bunch of those speeches live streamed. And instead, I'm getting video footage of the front of Claridge's with lineups of Brussels. Like, there was more cops in front of that hotel than there was in the main square in front of the EU during the farmers' protests that I covered with a couple of the TEC guys back in January and February. And what it said online was that speakers could get out of the hotel but couldn't get back in. And this is just so that the listeners are aware, right? This is a conference where Viktor Orban, who is the leader of an EU member state, a more prominent French politician, there's MEPs, there's MPs. So there's both democratically elected politicians as well as a lot of prominent conservative thinkers who are all showing up here. This isn't some sort of alt-right conference. It's not even a fringe conservative conference. In terms of conservatism, this is about as mainstream as you can get. And yet you've got cops lining the front of the hotel. So what happened there?
I was about to enter the stage when we were informed that the police is outside the venue, not to protect us, but to shut us down. And, you know, just if you think about what happened with the Brussels mayor 2 weeks before the conference, when he wasn't willing to give us any police protection, it was insane. I mean, we, of course, ran out to see what's happening, and the police let us know that we have only 15 minutes to respond to the order given by the mayor. That was the third mayor that tried to shut the conference, not to shut the conference down, because we haven't even started back then, but to cancel the whole event. So we had 15 minutes to respond to the order, and thankfully, ADF International and its lawyers, one of whom was a speaker at NatCon, intervened and challenged the mayor's decision by filing an extreme urgency procedure. I think it's a procedure whereby you can give, you can receive a decision from a judge in a very short period of time. So a court hearing took place the same day on the 26th of April at 10 p.m. And the judge essentially decided that the mayor's decision was groundless and that it has to be suspended. So justice was served and we were able to continue the conference. But there were some couple of hours when, you know, we had no certainty whether we will be able to carry on or not. And as you said, there was even a time when the police would not let anyone out. I tried to exit the venue. I tried to grab some water and food for my friend who was about to faint, but the police would not let me through. So we ran out of water, we ran out of food, and there was no way in or out. So there was about, I think, an hour when everybody got a little scared and skeptical.
So to pinpoint a couple of things about this third mayor, what was the basis of this order? Because what a lot of people aren't going to understand, and then I didn't get it until I messaged a few of you guys while it was happening. It's like, well, how could a mayor issue a shutdown of a public conference at a hotel with whom they have a contract and then send police to shut it down again, when it must be emphasized, there's democratically elected politicians showing up and speaking at this thing? What was the pretext for his? Who is this mayor, and what was the pretext for shutting it down?
So let's start by who this mayor is. Mm-hmm. Instead of giving you my own opinion, I would just quote Eric Zemmour, who we managed to interview at NatCon, and he said that the Turkish mayor, it's an important part, the Turkish mayor used the police as his own Islamist militia to shout down his political opponents. And that's what basically happened. And the mayor cited the possibility of public disorder. That was the excuse, public disorder. possibility of public disorder.
So for the listeners who don't know, Eric is a French presidential candidate, for those who are unfamiliar with whom he is. And you're saying that public disorder was cited as the justification when the only public disorder was caused by him sending his police force to block a legitimate gathering of intellectual discussion.
Exactly. Exactly. It was a completely peaceful conference. We did not do anything that would cause public disorder. There were some Antifa people in front of the venue, but they didn't do anything either. They just stared. Nothing like that happened. So it was completely peaceful. There was no violence except, from the police when they would not let anyone in or out.
So what was it like to be, for the personal side of it, because you were there, some of the footage was really wild, was a couple of the politicians trying to get in and being blocked. What was it like for these politicians to try and attempt to access the conference where they were scheduled to speak and being blocked by the cops?
It's good that I mentioned Zemmour. He was one of the speakers and prominent politicians who could not enter the conference because the police was blocking the entrance. It was just unbelievable. I can't find words for it. He was surrounded by the media, by the police, and he could not take a step forward without someone not trying to block his way. We, of course, tried to get him in. We talked with the police, trying to convince them that given that, back then we didn't have the judge's decision. So, they took a legal path. I mean, ADF International, but we didn't have a decision. So all we could do was to, from man to man talk, like going to the police, explaining the situation to them and to trying to convince them there's no reason for them not to let Eric Zemmour or other speakers, politicians inside, but there was no way to convince them that it would be the right thing to do. But on the second day, when the police left after justice was served and ADF National International won this case for us, the police disappeared. So everybody was free to enter and leave whenever they wanted. So Eric Zemmour the former Polish Prime Minister Morawiecki was also able to have his remarks, deliver their remarks at NatCon. So what could not happen on the first day happened on the second.
So were there any ramifications or consequences for this mayor at all?
I'm sure there will be, not at the moment, unfortunately.
So there was mentions that, sort of like liberal Brussels didn't want this to happen, because obviously you've got EU goings on occurring at the exact same time that you have a committee where a lot of Euroskeptics are present, because obviously with a title like NatCon, National Conservatism, plenty of the people who are there have a lot of concerns about the impact of the EU on national sovereignty, which I believe was one of the themes of your own speech, where you were talking about Hungarian conservatism early on in the conference. And so was there any protest from any liberal-minded people watching this happen? Was the footage of outside of Claridge's shocking to any of the progressive or liberal elements who then spoke out about some of the values that the EU is supposed to symbolize?
None of that. None that I've heard of. But as I said in our weekly podcast series, Brussels and beyond, it would be, when it comes to the European elections, it would be a major mistake for any conservative party in the European Parliament not to use this incident in their electoral campaign. In fact, we are less than 2 months away from the upcoming EU elections, where hundreds of millions of EU citizens will have a chance to have their voices heard and to take back control from the faceless Brussels Brussels bureaucracy and its clear-cut globalist agenda. So what happened in Brussels perfectly illustrates what MEPs in the ECR and in the ID group have been saying for years. So if anyone had any doubts why this EU election matters in terms of freedom of speech, freedom of thought, well, you know, here is your proof.
Yeah, so what's interesting is the refusal of the first hotel too, because one of the things that I think people can miss, right, is we can talk about freedom of speech and they can come back and say, well, it actually had nothing to do with you being allowed to speak at the first venue and everything to do with whether or not you're entitled to police protection for that speech. But the reality in Europe increasingly is that it's difficult to express conservative views in public without police protection. And so to give you an example, when I spoke at the Austrian March for Life in Vienna a few years ago, there were swarms of Antifa, like mobs along the sides of the crowd. Then they were much less well-behaved than the ones that you referred to outside of Claridge's. They were doing a lot more than looking. They were, you know, in black masks. They were screaming swears. And you've been to a March for Life. This is like a family event, right? This isn't even like a farmer's protest or something like that. This is like an event with like balloons and, you know, people pushing strollers and stuff like that. And there was a cordon of cops all the way around the crowd. And the same thing happened at the March for Life in Berlin, where I believe at one of the recent Marches for Life, they had a police officer for every three attendees. And there was just shy of 2,000 people there. So in order for pro-life Germans to express their pro-life sentiment in their capital city, they needed to essentially have like a small army of police officers to ensure they didn't get assaulted by Antifa. And so would you agree that a refusal to provide police protection for free speech is actually just vetoing free speech entirely in an increasingly hostile culture where conservatives are not capable of safely expressing their view in public without police protection?
Absolutely. You know, we tried to contact the Belgian police directly. And after many attempts, the final answer was that, well, if you're organizing an event in Brussels, the venue has to contact us and give us all the necessary information based on which we will decide whether police protection is needed or not. And after giving Claridge all the information on the conference, you know, the list of speakers, you know, MEP Viktor Orban, Eric Zemmour, Morawiecki, we had like a great number of prominent politicians and intellectuals from all across Europe. So after we gave that list to ConcertNoble, and basically the CEO of ConcertNoble took that list to the Brussels police and showed it to them, they said, well, yeah, two unarmed police officers is all you can get. So, yeah, as I said, I'm sure that the mayor's motivations were purely political. And there's no way in hell that anyone with a clear conscience, without, you know, having any political motivations, would say, yes, well, no, I will not. And not just prominent European prime ministers and politicians, but we also had an Israeli MP, Amichai Shikli. So we were worried about his safety. And of course, he had his personal security and all that. And we, of course, were in contact and hired some security guys from G-Force and other companies, firms. But yes, I mean, what happened with the Belgian police is it was a clear message that if you, as a conservative outlet, want to organize something big enough in Brussels that would perhaps attract Antifa attract Antifa to organize a protest, well, too bad, so sad, we cannot help you with that.
Well, I want to emphasize something here for listeners who might be thinking, okay, so conservative events get regularly protested, right? Antifa shows up at all kinds of things. But I think there's this sort of very sinister symbolism to this unfolding where it did, right? So I attended the NatCon conference in D.C. a couple of years back. D.C. votes like 97% Democrat. It's a very progressive stronghold, and they barely needed any security at all, right? Like, you know, people were going outside and smoking, and there was no protesters, and nobody was worried about their personal safety. I didn't go to the one in London, but I'm told it was a similar sort of atmosphere. People weren't really worried. And then you take Brussels, which is, again, the capital of Europe. This is the heart of where all the decisions are made. And there is where suddenly you have threats of violence. You've got progressive groups threatening to try shut the event down. You're worried about the safety of attendees. And then you have, you know, the top brass refusing to provide protection. Do you think there is some sort of sinister symbolism in this taking place in the heart of Europe when this didn't happen in London, which, as we all know, has its own problems with mass protests, didn't happen in DC, which is one of the most progressive places in the US outside of San Francisco, and yet you go to Brussels and conservatives can't gather without the threat of violence or some Turkish mayor using his shock troops to try shut it down?
I think it was less about potential violence and more about a message from high above.
Mm.
I mean, that's what Frank Peretti tried to, explain to the CEO of Concert Noble. And he was right at the end. I mean, you know, as I told you, there were a couple of Antifa people, but they were completely harmless. They just looked and stood at the entrance. So what he was explaining to the CEO is that, you know, you can get some media pressure, of course. You can get some political pressure, sure thing. You can get some threats from Antifa, but there's no way in hell that, you know, besides throwing some eggs, there would any violence occur during the event. And we, of course, took everything into account and told them that, you know, we bring our own security. You just need to, you know, let it go and communicate that to the Brussels police. And if they're not willing to give us protection, that's okay. We can move forward with it because we have our own protection from an outside security firm. And you know, so just, yeah, I kind of wandered away. But yes, to answer your question, it was never about actual threats. It was just about a political decision that was made in the heart of Europe that is just completely hostile to conservative forces. And the funny thing is that, you know, in Brussels, you know, that, like, there's, I'm sure that there's a far left conference happening at the moment. I mean, you know, these conferences, not as big as NatCon, of course, but like smaller conferences, both far left and far right, are happening every single day or week in Brussels, the heart of Europe, as you said, the home of all EU institutions. And just to, you know, like, it was like, you know, when you're at high school and there's a bully that would not let you go and live your life. That's what it felt like with NatCon. You know, the Brussels mayors thought it's their time to shine and to show that they cannot let any conservative voices that are so loud, as loud as, you know, we were at NatCon, to be heard.
So speaking of media coverage, I obviously followed this on X, but I read the reports that I read were, I know the European Conservative, of course, published a whole series of them. One of the headline articles was by Rod Dreher, who was there. I also, there was a really good article on this in Unheard magazine, and then I believe The Spectator. So there was definitely quite a few prestigious conservative outlets who covered the events, which makes sense because I suspect a lot of their staff or journalists were actually present at the event or planning to be. Was there any response or coverage of the event from the mainstream media writ large? I know it wasn't in the North American press, but maybe that's because this is a European event. Was there any significant coverage condemning what these Brussels mayors did in Europe?
No, I mean, they went silent. They went completely silent. The media was loud of, all the conservative right-wing outlets, but there were no news from the more liberal leftist ones. What they did is that they took some of the speeches and they highlighted some parts of the speeches that fit their agenda, but there were no mention of the police trying to shut us down unrightfully, you know. They just conveniently left that part out.
Yeah, it's interesting. I still remember the event at which I lost my faith in the mainstream media as I was going to write about some political events. And I read the reports by the mainstream journalists of the events I was at. And it was just, as you say, It was like they just completely ignored everything inconvenient. And reporters, you know, are supposed to go and report on, you know, what's happening on the ground and then publish it in their paper. That is what, like, that's what the European conservative does. We tell the truth about what we see on the ground, even when it doesn't align perfectly with our agenda, right? When we covered the farmers' protests, we talked about, you know, the bottles getting fired over the barbed wire barricades, even though most of us are pretty sympathetic to what the farmers are asking for. But our job is still to report what we saw actually happening. But when it comes to the left-wing press, they largely, with some notable exceptions, don't do that anymore.
Yes, what the leftist media did is, well, it was either regurgitating what the Brussels mayor was saying, that it was a far-right conference, that it would have been great if it would have been shut down because that's what we deserve, or just, you know, completely ignoring the fact that Brussels almost managed to cancel freedom of speech in the very heart of Europe.
Well, thank you so much for joining us to tell us everything that happened.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining the show this week. If you'd like to check out past shows or subscribe to future shows, head over to lifesitenews.com, click on the podcast tab. You can find The Van Maren Show there, and then you can subscribe to us on any platform where you get your podcast content. Thanks so much for listening.